Steve Exton believes in the weirdly possible, and that in the vast starry soup we call the universe is certain we are not alone. He says there are such things as fair folk and the woodland green man, and why shouldn't there be ghosts? What are ghosts, anyway? Steve reads maps as you might read a book, especially the Ordnance Survey maps. They have, he says, so many stories to tell and on so many different levels. Not surprisingly, he has a love of geography as well as social and medieval history. When Steve started writing about the atmospheres, mobile phones were still the size of suitcases and smartphones weren't even a smart idea. He lives with his wife in South Gloucestershire, just across the River Severn from Wales. Let's find out what these atmospheres are anyway, shall we? Welcome to the Turning Readers into Writers podcast, where we teach beginner writers how to find the time and the confidence to write their first novel. I'm your host, Emma Desi, and I'm very excited that you're here. Thank you for joining me today, because if you've been longing to write your novel for forever, then this is the place to be. Think of this as your weekly dose of encouragement, of hand-holding and general cheerleading as you figure out how you're going to write your first novel. Trust me, as a mum of three young kids, I know how tricky it can be to tuck some time aside for yourself on a regular basis. And even when you do find that spare 5 minutes, you can feel so overwhelmed that no writing gets done. Trust me, I have been there, but this podcast is going to help you in practical ways, because once a week I'll be delivering an episode that gives you steps to building a writing routine, encouragement to build your confidence, and cheerleading until you reach the end. Okay, let's start. Well, thank you, Steve, for joining me today. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing.
I started writing, trying out children's stories and things. Had some strange ideas about different things, different influences and that. But I wrote some children's stories for my granddaughter, who was about five at the time, and now she's 35. And I never actually finished them. So I thought about, I thought the only way into writing was through traditional publishing. I didn't really understand how it worked. So I just wrote anyway, because I liked it. So that was about 30 years ago. And then life happens, doesn't it? So everything gets in the way, you move house, or you've got a job or whatever. So everything sort of went on the back burner for a while, and then I did write some stories that were absolute rubbish and really boring, even after I've read them myself. I thought they were great at the time, but after reading them, I thought that these are terrible. And then I thought, I had this idea about, have you seen the film Little Soldiers, Small Soldiers?
No, I don't think so.
Well, anyway, I had this idea about what if we were invaded by an army of small soldiers. So, and I had this idea about writing a story around that, but they grew in size from 12 inches tall to about 6 foot. And so then I had another idea. What if there was people around that they're there, but you can't see them? A bit like elves and fairies. So then I thought, wonder if I could write a story that if I could hold a story together over 100 pages. Well, 190,000 words later.
Wow.
I had this huge story, which I started in 1998, before technology was really as it is now. Yeah, when a mobile phone was the size of a suitcase, and things like that. So now we've got smartphones. So I wrote this huge story, which ended up as about 670 pages. But in that story, I created a history, and I based it around a holiday resort in space, and then a disaster. A family on a one-time holiday, and then something goes wrong, and then it gets fired back in time, and then it pops up 30 years later, and I've created a time scale and a landscape. So, and then I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to, because I was still thinking you still had to go down the traditional route. I didn't really know. When you go on Amazon and you see all those books, you think, well, they've all been lucky. They've all managed to find publishers and agents. I didn't realize you could do it, publish it yourself. So once I found out you could do that, I thought no one's going to want to buy 670 pages of a story they never heard before. So I wrote another, which I published at the end of September, about two of the main characters and how they got together.
I was going to ask, was it associated?
Yeah, it's sort of a lead-in. It's a magnet to the other one, of which I've now written a magnet for that one. So it's a lead-in story about two of the main characters and how they get together and how the disaster happens and what the instance is that creates everything else.
I see. So I can tell from what you've said then, so you've been writing a lot over the last 30 years or so, so you've got a real big back catalogue of words there. So how do you balance your writing time with the rest of sort of family life and that, you know, the paid job that we all have to do?
When I wrote the big one, started in 98, since starting writing that one, I moved house twice. I've had lots of different jobs. I've worked abroad, so, and I've been to college. So that just got interspersed with how I was living. When I have time, I write a lot. When I don't have time, I fit it in between times. I work 37 hours a week. I start work very early. I finish about 3 PM. I usually have a sleep, and then I, in the evenings, I write for 2 or 3 hours before I go to bed. And Fridays, well, I was doing a cover design this morning, so I'm doing my own cover, that this morning. Over the weekend, I might do some writing, but I don't really have a routine. I do it when I'm in the mood. And I might write for an hour, and then I might have an hour's break and have a coffee. Then I start again.
And when you do have a writing session, do you have a goal for that session? Is it just for a set period of time, or maybe to write a scene, or perhaps to write a certain number of words?
If I can get writing, I'm in the flow. I can probably do couple of thousand words, 2 or 3 hours, I tend to write, and then the next day I will read it through and edit it, and I tend to go back several pages or several chapters and read it through, so it always, even if I'm two or three months apart, it's always going to have the same flow to it.
Right.
So when I wrote the 190,000 word one, and I'd left it for 2 or 3 years because of circumstances, I went back and I reread it. Mm-hmm. So all of the current flow at the time. So I don't necessarily have a set goal. So at the moment, I'm trying to design the cover, so I'm spending all time on that. It is however it happens at the time, really. Can't be more specific than that.
No, that's fine. That's the way you write. Some people do have a kind of word count that they work towards. Others, it's just the amount of time they've got available. And others, you know, as the muse takes them. So it's that little bit different for everybody.
Yeah, I tend to sort of write randomly, really. So I've decided to write a collection of stories around that instance that caused everything. But I'm not going to write them in order. I'm going to write them how I feel at the time. So
And I was just going to say, is that the same for your novel writing as well? Do you write in a linear fashion, or do you write depending on which scene it is and what's taken your inspiration that day?
When I wrote the longer one, I'd got the whole basic story written, but then I realised I'd got an awful lot of loose ends, so then I had to go back into it and re-tie up all the loose ends. When I wrote the short one I've just written, I used quite a bit of work from one of the other story, took a section out and then wrote it in a linear manner. And also when I wrote the one I've just published, I wrote it all in one draft and then went back in and then seeded in other little bits. So they all tie up with the other stories as well.
Nice. I like it. And with your stories, I guess more with the big one that you wrote, did you plot that, or was that more discovery writing and you, what happened kind of thing?
Tend to start off with a plot and then it tends to start writing itself. I try and stick to the plot as best I can in general, but if it looks like it's going in an interesting direction, I'll follow that direction and then fit it in. It seems to have worked quite nicely. The general idea is I know how it's going to start and I know how it's going to finish. What happens in the middle is whatever happens, really.
So, because I'm guessing then that because of the size of this, your first one, the big one, that it's an epic story. It's an epic sci-fi.
Well, I've been trying to analyse that. It's not really sci-fi at all. It's common everyday life in an extraordinary situation, really. So because I've created my own universe. So I've got one set of peoples living in the other side of the galaxy in a society that's advanced of our own, but it's everyday life. That way you don't have to explain anything. So that's based around everyday people, but they just happen to be on different planets. So they've got a society that planet hops, where we hop between towns. That way I can create a bigger landscape and I can have more races of people.
Okay.
And then because of this thing that goes wrong on this holiday resort, they pop up in England just before the Norman Conquest. So then I've created a history that goes up to the First World War. So then you end up with a fairly advanced technology meeting up with a relatively primitive technology, and people that, because they're survivors from a different metabolism and a different spectrum, they can't actually be seen by the people they're living parallel with. So you've got a modern technology, a relatively primitive modern technology, and people that have had to develop that don't have much technology at all.
So you've
all
got
in the same place all at the
right.
same time.
Okay. So chaos ensues.
It was at one point I had five different races of people all in the same place at the same time. So.
Ah, interesting. And a lot of a lot for you to keep in your head, all these different peoples.
Yeah, it was tricky, but I've got two races of people who are advanced. I've got Englishmen, so you've got upper and lower class Englishmen, and then you've got three races of people who are survivors, and one race of people who are a mixture of the two. So all in the same place.
So now, when I was reading about about you and about the books, I thought to myself, now what is an atmosphere? So I wonder if you could tell us what that is.
Yeah, atmosphere is the holiday resort. Imagine Disney World in space. So it's a satellite orbiting, it's an orbiting satellite holiday resort of a series of spheres that are collected together that looks like the atom emblem you see on nuclear devices.
Okay, okay. And so where does the inspiration for all of this come from?
Straight out the top of my head. I don't know. I wanted to come up with an explanation for green men and fairies, elves and fairies and mythological green men of the forest. I also wanted a story that involved stone circles. And so that's all to do with the survivors from the atom spheres disaster. So what happened was these spheres, which are huge, about 2 kilometers in diameter, gravitational engineering masterpieces, things that each one is a holiday resort all on its own, and they're all joined together by loops and circles. And what happens is, purely by accident, they've got randomly floating spheres, which they have adverts on, called ad spheres, getting in line. And when they all get in line, when they shouldn't get in line, but when they do get in line and the sun's rays are on them, it creates a force field, and one of them disappears.
So that feels like that's got an echo of the standing stones, perhaps.
Yeah, well, the standing stones, I'm not going to give too much away. The standing stones link up. So the standing stones are all to do with the beacons that are on the outside of the spheres. And the skin of the spheres, when that crashes into the planet and gets buried in the landscape, the standing stones are the circles of beacons that are left behind. And they're still emitting a signal. And it's their signal that's being emitted that they pick up 30 years later.
I see. Okay.
So that's the big story. And then the little story I've just published is about the last people to see that sphere before it disappears and what it does to their families. Right. And then the signal coming back later. And then you've got two of the main characters, how they get together. So the one I've just published, which is Club 5806, is the romance between two of the main characters. And then the reader magnet that I'm just written, which I'm just drafting and doing the cover for, explains the disaster again from a different angle. So, and then what I'm going to do is I can break down the large story into two separate stories, and they'll stand up quite nicely on their own. And they all pivot on the instance of the disaster, but from different directions.
I wonder if I can just take you back a moment, just for those listeners who don't know what that is. Can you explain what a reader magnet is?
Well, I don't really know much myself, but having gone into this publishing business and signing up on that SPF 101 course and all that sort of stuff, first thing that Mark Dawson said was, you need a reader magnet. And basically, from how I understand it, giving something away for free to encourage people to sign up. So anybody who's on my mailing list, which is about 11 people at the moment, next month is going to get a free 40-page short story.
That's marvellous. No, well done on getting your first 11 people, because everybody's got to start somewhere, you know. Everyone's got to start with that first person. So fantastic. Well done, you. You're growing your list steadily. So yeah, there's a nice way of introducing people to your characters and to your big body of work. So I was interested that you said that the big piece, does that have a title, by the way?
Yeah. The big one.
Yeah. Or a working title.
I had it published and printed through Ingram Spark about 4 years ago, but I never really did anything with it. And I gave it the title of Spherios.
Okay.
And that's the name of the sphere that disappears.
And so Spherios, you mentioned that you were thinking what you'll do is you'll split it into two. Is that right?
Yeah, so I'm going to split Spherios into two. So one will be called Spherios, and the other one will be based around a journalist, and that's probably going to be called Lomax, which is what her name is. So two of the main characters, yeah.
And will those books, will you be able to read them as standalones, do you think, or will they be very much sort of interlinked, you know, a sort of overall story?
I think all four, which would be the Magnet, Club 5806, Spherios and Lomax, you can read them all individually. I'm going to give them numbers because they're going in a collection. It's the number, it's the order I've written them in. But you don't have to read them. You can read them in any order you like because they all do sort of link in together. And I also think I'm also going to do the big body of work under the name of The Atomspheres and Its Legacy. And I'm going to publish that one as well.
And so the legacy suggests that maybe this is the next generation along, or the outcome of...
Yeah, so the calling it a legacy, it's all derived from that instance where it all went wrong. So they're all derived from that. They're all linked to that. And because it's a legacy, it means I can write about anything that relates or refers back to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You've got big plans. There's lots ahead. There's no stopping you now.
I started writing it. The idea was to supplement my pension. And now I'm not so sure it's going to happen. But, I hope to retire soon. So.
Now you've said in your bio that you've got sort of an interest in the fair folk and the green man mysteries. So do you have a love of sort of, I want to say the sort of pagan stories as well as history? And you've said that you're interested in history as well, but I wonder if you kind of enjoy the kind of fairy stories as well.
Well, if you think of it as Midsummer Night's Dream. And I like pagan stories. I like history. I like Bernard Cornwell, the medieval Saxon Viking histories. I like any history. And the pagan stuff, yeah, stone circles.
I love a good stone circle myself.
Good stone circle. And I also like I also like Terry Pratchett and his satire, which was good, which is mostly quite a lot of satire on Shakespeare. I like Shakespeare. Green Man.
Yes. Well, listen, I'm conscious of time. We're just about to run out of time, but we do have enough space to ask you to let people know where they can find you and your books online.
I've got a Facebook page. Steve Exton and the Atomspheres Legacy. And I've also got a book, this book, which is on Amazon at the moment at $2.99 ebook.
Lovely.
That's about it. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I'll make sure I link to those in the show notes. Well, Steve, thanks so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate you taking time out of your day to speak to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Now, if you'd like to find some more ways to write, you can download my free cheat sheet, 30 Top Tips to Find Time to Write, by going to emmadesi.com/30toptips. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me on Facebook at Emma Desi Author. And if you're enjoying the podcast so far, please don't forget to leave a review wherever you download your podcasts. It really does help new listeners find the show. And of course, I appreciate your support. Until next time, keep writing.